Yeah, it's a great story. You know, it's interesting how great stories come out of really bad situations.
Welcome to the 366th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Just after dawn on a September day, Wendy Johnson stood at the edge of a 43-acre field on her farm in north central Iowa. The puffy white emissions of an ethanol plant could be seen a few miles to the east, and dozens of wind turbines dominated the rest of the flat landscape. But Wendy's focus was on the ground and the shoots of green growth that were emerging in the field. What was growing was kernza, a form of intermediate wheatgrass. Farmers in the region have found that they can grow it for grain and forage for roughly 3 years without replanting it, making it the world's first commercially viable perennial grain. Over the years, the University of Minnesota has been working with kernza germplasm to develop lines that will do well in the climate and soil conditions found in the upper Midwest. This research on kernza is being coordinated by the Forever Green Initiative, a U of M program that's working to develop a variety of crops that can help diversify the landscape beyond monocrops of corn and soybeans. The idea is to create a stable of crops that cover the land year-round, generating economic benefits while protecting water and building soil health. Wendy, who along with her partner Johnny Rafkin owns and operates Joya Food and Fiber Farm near Charles City, is among a handful of producers in the region who are experimenting with kernza. Working with a cutting-edge crop has come with challenges. For example, at the time I interviewed Wendy, she still had 2 years' worth of unsold kernza grain in storage. Like other farms that are growing this genetic cousin of wheat, Joya Farm has found consistent markets difficult to come by. "It's a big risk, so that's why I'm doing this," she told me on that September morning. The "this" Wendy was referring to was a cow-calf herd that was grazing the new growth of kernza a little over a month after the grain part of the plant had been harvested. Wendy and Johnny have been impressed with the experimental plant's ability to provide forage for livestock during the same growing season that's being harvested for grain. Wendy's family raises corn and soybeans in the neighborhood, but her goal for the 130 acres she and Johnny farm is to perennialize the land as much as possible. So, smack dab in the middle of countless acres of annual row crops, Joya Farm is raising livestock on perennial forages. Besides cattle, the operation also raises sheep, pigs, and poultry, and Wendy and Johnny direct market their production. So, it makes sense that Joya Farm would give a perennial plant like kernza a try. Using funding supplied by the Inflation Reduction Act and implemented through an Environmental Quality Incentives Program contract, Wendy and Johnny seeded those 43 acres in the fall of 2022. As Wendy made clear during my visit, livestock have made taking a bit of a risk on this new crop much more palatable. Besides providing grazing and grain, kernza also produces prodigious amounts of straw, thus supplying a kind of triple treat of economic opportunity during the same growing season. And building soil health is another major benefit to growing a crop that doesn't have to be replanted year after year. Despite the lack of hills in this part of Iowa, water and wind can do significant damage to the soil here. When Wendy attended an LSP field day in southeastern Minnesota a few years ago and saw how kernza roots can extend several feet into the earth, she was convinced that this was the kind of agroecological addition her farm needed if it was to become resilient in the long term. That's particularly important at a time when climate change exposes her operation to extremes on either end of the weather spectrum. After checking out the cattle herd, Wendy and I sat down to talk about the role she sees kernza playing in the perennialization of her farm, and how reintegrating livestock onto the land provides the kind of four-legged insurance policy one needs when trying something new. So Wendy, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your kind of, well, we originally were calling it the dual use of kernza, but it turned out you said it's more like a tri use of kernza. But before we go into that, could you give us a little background on what drew you to kernza? What you have this operation here, and then your family also raises corn and beans north of here, and
you have had some experience with small grains, with oats, it sounds like, and you're not afraid to experiment a little bit. But what was it about Kernza that got you started? And my understanding is you first seeded it in 2022. But what was it that first got you interested in looking at something like Kernza there in the middle of corn and soybean country here?
So I actually went to an LSP field day in southeast Minnesota on a Kernza farm. Well, it was a forage farm, but they were growing Kernza for grain and for grazing. And they did a soil pit. And those soil pits really tell a huge story, but just seeing the root systems of a grain crop that you could take for grain, you could graze it, and it had all these external benefits for soil erosion, you know, soil health, water quality. For me, it was like a win-win. I was already starting to transition our farm from organic corn soybeans to a more perennial system after we started to see really the hydrology on this farm with these larger rainfall events that we were seeing over the course of the last 10 years. And we were really looking at solutions. I liked Kernza also because it had that tri-use where it helps us de-risk economically what we are growing here. It's not just everything's off the hoof. It also is a grain crop. It's also a straw crop. So there, that multi-purpose use was really attractive when we started learning about Kernza.
And it sounds like there was, you were talking about the soil pit and seeing the deep roots, that's really important for you here. We're in north central Iowa here, which is, people driving down the interstate go, well, this ground's all flat. There's not any erosion problems. But you said you have a little bit of an issue here with kind of where the watershed, you're at the bottom of a watershed. So there is a little bit of some issue with runoff and erosion, surprisingly, kind of in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. We started to witness the amount of soil that's coming through our farm by actually, there was a waterway in one of our fields, and we reshaped the waterway. It was basically became flat because of the amount of soil that was coming in from our neighbors. And so I think we dug just in one area about 8 tons of soil out of a waterway that existed for a long time, but had basically become flat. And so we noticed it because when we were growing corn and soybeans, we actually noticed that it was higher in the waterway than it was in the field. And so we're thinking, there's something not quite right about this. And so we reshaped the waterway and we realized, oh, that's our neighbor's soil. And so we later decided to put that all in perennials too, because of the amount of water that does flow from a short watershed, but one nonetheless. And we were just seeing a lot of harder, stronger, more extreme water coming from the sky. I wish it would come from the sky now, but yeah. Those extremes we hadn't witnessed before. And so to protect the soil, we wanted to do something that was going to protect it better than a typical corn and soybean crop rotation.
Mm-hmm. And kind of just overall, you are the focus of this operation here. This 130 acres is, it's a grazing operation. You're doing beef and sheep, and you also raise pigs and poultry. So perennialization is something that's really kind of where you're driving to. That's your ultimate goal. And so it sounds like the Kernza kind of fits into that perennial aspect, that you're trying to draw on that perennial power a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to make perennials a viable crop and for grazing both, and integrate that, you know, use this farm as kind of an example, a sample mm-hmm. of what can be possible. Yes, we don't have corn and soybeans anymore. We did, and we're showing and we're seeing and observing the power that perennials can offer in a corn and soybean system. So we know that, and we can take that information and observations to a different scale. Mm-hmm. And so we have that opportunity. And so with everything, you want to start out small. You want to try things out and then expand into them. This farm is kind of a sampling of what can happen, what are all the positives of perennials.
We just went out and looked at a 43-acre field, I think, of Kernza that you had harvested in August, and you're grazing some cattle on contract for a neighbor on there. But can you just take us through what a year looks like from current, your different uses that you're getting out of it, kind of the tri uses, as you put it, and yeah, and what the timing is on different things. So just to start out, I guess, to set the landscape for Kernza, you plant it in the fall. So then, but then, yeah, what's the kind of the process going out from your different uses when you're grazing it, when you're harvesting it, that type of thing?
We learned really early that Kernza is a really robust crop. And so when you plant it in the fall, you get green up right away that fall. So you're covered, your soil is covered that fall through the winter. And then it's one of the very first things that greens up in the spring that we discovered. So it greens up in the spring when maybe everything around us is all black, ready for corn and soybean planting. It's already green, has really that deep root structure is already, it's starting to develop. And then we graze it. We're able to graze it earlier in the spring. For example, in late April and early May, we're able to graze it where we're not able to graze some of our cool season perennial pastures, forages. And we're waiting for those legumes to kind of wake up and get bigger. Meanwhile, we're grazing this Kernza crop, but then you let it rest because it needs to grow for grain. So then we let it rest, it grows for grain, and we harvest that at the end of August. We remove livestock from that field. We did in early June this year. So they grazed it for mostly the month of May. And then you let it grow for grain. We harvest at the end of August, and we take the straw, we bale the straw, and it starts growing the instant that you cut it. So even though you actually cut it when it's still, the stem is still green, which I think that's what carries a lot of its nutrient qualities too for the straw. And then it's almost like a coarser grass hay, basically, with relative feed values that are similar to a grass hay. And then we can graze it. It starts to grow back tall enough to start grazing in October. So that's what we're doing now. End of September, we start grazing it. We'll graze it all through the month of October into November. It keeps the soil covered, keeps the weeds down. It's just perfect.
Yeah. And you have had it, so this is your second season with it. So you've been able to actually work with it in kind of extremes weather-wise. The last couple of years have been extremely drought, kind of historically drought, dry times. You were able to get it some production, sounds like some good production out of it through that. But what was interesting was, of course, right now we're dry, but earlier in the year we had, again, historically wet situations, particularly in May, it sounds like. But it sounds like you were impressed. I think when we first went out there to look at that paddock, you said, boy, I was really glad I had this growing here when we were getting all that rain. Can you describe kind of how it worked well in a really extremely wet situation too for you?
Yeah, it's a great story. You know, it's interesting how great stories come out of really bad situations. And so last year in 2023, like you said, we had historic drought. I mean, I think for the entire year of 2023, we had about 10 to 11 inches in the entire year of 2023. And in 2024, we had over 10 to 11 inches in just the month of May. And so it was, to see a crop growing in the end of September and into October with very little moisture. I mean, it maybe had half an inch of moisture and have it green up and continue to grow. That was amazing. And then in the month of April and May to have that much rainfall and have a crop growing there where you're seeing all around you, all the fields around you are black, mm-hmm. and seeing the amount of erosion that's coming, you know, happening in those fields, yet your soil is entirely covered and it's green and you're able to graze it even when it should be really muddy, but it's not. It just shows the robustness and the resiliency of that crop and what it can do for basically saving the land, mm-hmm. from massive soil erosion and drought.
And you said you actually had drone footage of showing where you were seeing the erosion lines.
Yeah, that was a huge eye-opener. So you can see from the air the soil erosion trails, I guess I'm going to call them, mm-hmm. the soil erosion that's happening all around us and how that water enters into our fields. Having that was just, that contrast was an eye-opener of, you know, if we had had just a tilled field and we were going to grow corn that year, mm-hmm. we would have had those same trails, and we would have lost a lot of soil. And that soil, you'll never see again. It just is. Yeah. It just disappears. To build soil takes millennia. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say millennia. It takes a lot of years, more than hundreds. So we're very thankful that we made that decision and to perennialize this farm, being at the bottom of a pretty small watershed, but a watershed nonetheless. There's soil erosion and wind erosion. I should also talk about wind erosion because our winds in wintertime, like derechos are real. And we even had a derecho a few years ago in the winter where we had tornadoes in December. We had derechos after that. But the type of wind erosion or wind erosion that we're seeing around us because of the strong winds that are occurring stronger and stronger in the winter. I have photographs of like soils, just the snow is gray and black. We have none of that here. We leave no soil exposed, and it's just a true testament, again, to the power of perennials and how resilient they are and how they can actually save us, save soil, which I wish there was a dollar amount to soil and to soil loss. I think that farmers would really take that much into consideration instead of, oh, it's just an eighth inch off the top. We have a lot. We have got a lot of soil. Our soil bank is thick. But if you actually do the digging, you know, if you have a tile that goes out or something, and you look at the amount of soil, topsoil that we have left, it's not very much at all. And so you think about if you lose a half inch or a quarter inch or an eighth of an inch every year from soil erosion, it might not be in your generation that you're going to see that loss, but we might not be able to grow crops on that. And then, you know, it might all be rocks.
Right. Looking at the grazing itself, you have a lot of experience with grazing what traditional perennial pastures. You know, you're doing rotational grazing, so you're not grazing them in a conventional way, but you do have a lot of experience with what people would recognize as grasses and forbs and that kind of thing. Is grazing Kernza different? Do you approach that differently, or is it about the same system that you've got set up with that?
So we're grazing it mostly in the earlier spring and the fall. Mm-hmm. And so we are treating it a little bit differently because our perennial pastures, we move them every single day. It's also it's more diverse because you have legumes and forbs and grasses all together, you know, mixed in. The Kernza is just, it's a grass, but it's a deep-rooted grass. So it has a lot of nutrients and minerals that the animals need. Because of the timing of when we graze, we give them larger size paddocks. So instead of moving them every single day, we'll move them every 3 to 5 days. You could even quarter section out a field, you know, of Kernza, put it into 4 paddocks, move those around. It's almost like the cows take a bite and it grows back. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's this amazing thing. I remember this last spring, we grazed cattle first, and then we had the sheep in a different, we were trying to get through the field as fast as we could, and we did move them every single day in May, actually. The Kernza was growing so quickly that they basically, if you could take a cutter bar, like a sickle bar, and just like mow it. You know, when you mow hay, it just mows it all one length, you know, so that what's left is just like maybe 4 or 6 inches. The cattle and sheep did the exact same thing. All they did was eat every single tops of all the Kernza plants. So when you looked at it, it was like you took a hay bar to it. You cut it like in a hay bine.
It was very uniform.
It was so uniform.
Wow.
It was like a really thick shag carpet. They like the tops of the plants. Obviously, it's more tender.
Yeah.
But it's just surprising. It was all the same height. Doesn't matter if it was a sheep or a cow.
Yeah.
It was the same. They left 6 to 8 inches. They ate the tops and move on.
Huh.
And so it was very uniform when we ended up stopping grazing the Kernza and going to our other pastures, where in a perennial pasture, you'll see all sorts of like ups and downs and things that they like and they don't like, and or they'll eat something more down than they will something else. Since I think this was all the same crop, maybe that's why they did it, but it was just really an interesting observation that I found. And then they do take the tops of it. You could turn around a week later and it looked like it was never eaten. It's kind of crazy. It grows so fast.
It's really aggressive.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And I guess the other lesson you learned a little bit was you were talking about you had, I think, the first year when you harvested the grain and the stems, you had cut really high, was it? And
yeah.
you had some issues with, I think, especially the sheet, maybe. Can you talk about that? That's something maybe people don't think about. And this is why pioneers like you are important, because you learn these hard lessons.
So I was really concerned about getting the windrows dried. When you cut a small grain, you need the airflow underneath the windrow to get it dry as it goes through a sweat process. And you're also cutting the Kerenza green. So the stems are still quite green when you're cutting it. And so my first year, I was really nervous about, I just wanted to make sure there was enough airflow. And we were going through a weather event where we had really humid mornings. There was lots and lots of dew, and then it would turn really hot. So I'd cut it higher than I normally would. I think I left 10 to 12 inches of stem height when I cut it. Well, after you harvest you get the windrows, you pick it up, you get the grain, you either spit out the straw or you harvest the straw. Those stems that were 10, 12 inches, when you think about a cow or a sheep eating, they eat a little closer to the ground, and they're trying to get the top growths of the of the Kerenza plant, which might be slightly shorter or at the same height of that stem length. The stems were poking them in the mouth and in the eyes, and it was a learning lesson for us of, so it dried very well in the windrow. It did well, but I think we could cut it shorter so that the new growth, when we do graze it in October, isn't poking the animals in the face as they're eating.
You know, going back a little bit to you were talking about one of the advantages is being able to get in there and graze that earlier than you can your perennial pastures. You're getting value out of it kind of right up front, in that you're getting a lower cost forage at a time of year that maybe you wouldn't be getting one, but also it's in a way you're adding economic value to your pastures because you're saving them. You're not tempted to go in and kind of maybe graze them when they shouldn't be. And so I would assume that maybe pays off later in the year in a pasture that's in better shape.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're seeing it right now. For example, we have our sheep in our pastures, we have the cows in the Kerenza, and we really should, with as little rain as we've had in the last few months, it would be great to just keep the cool seasons like as they are, put them to bed that way, or have more stockpiled forage. We really rely on that stockpiled forage to save us on feeding hay so early in the year. When we get a great rainfall year, we can graze our pastures up until January. This year, I think and last year was a prime example. That's when destocking needs to happen. For example, we had way too many animals for how little rain that we had and how little forages that we had. But man, thank goodness for that Kerenza, because I was able to start grazing them in September and they did fine out there. It really saved our cool season pastures by giving them 3 to 4 weeks of extra grazing somewhere else and letting that rest, that they came back just as this year, those pastures came back just as robustly.
This is, it's really good to see that this has been a good experience for you. For this to be sustained, it sounds like it's really sustainable ecologically, and it's really been good for building resiliency on your farm from that standpoint, and soil health and all of that. But for this to be sustainable for your farm in the long term, it has to pay. And so it sounds like it's really helping with the livestock production end of stuff. But I think you said that, if you don't mind me sharing this, you have 2 years worth of Kerenza stored right now because you haven't, the market has been an issue. And I've talked to a lot of farmers. It's a big issue right now is the markets. It's that old chicken and the egg thing. Do you raise that new crop first or get the markets, or, and you try to kind of have them both arrive at the same time. And right now, it's just, there is some issues with the marketing of Kerenza. It sounds like maybe that it is so key for a farmer like you. If you were just a grain farmer, this would be a bigger issue. It's still an issue, and you've got it. You're working as part of a cooperative to try to find markets, but you've gotten a little bit of a safety valve in that you do have the livestock to add value to it right now. and not just rely on that income from the grain end of it.
Yeah, that's really the most important piece of doing something that is a little bit riskier in the marketplace, maybe because it's a very new grain and a lot of people don't know about it. They don't know how to use it, things like that. But I feel very optimistic and hopeful about Kernza grain as a viable grain, simply because of its ecological benefits. And businesses, CPGs, are looking for ways to improve their stories and help with this whole, you know, there's a whole carbon thing that is tied along with Kernza that can be a great benefit. But definitely it reduces my risk when I thought about growing the grain. Hey, I can graze it. And actually, I thought to myself this earlier this year, if the water shuts off again and I'm short, hey, let's say we only get another 10 inches of rain in 2024, which thank goodness we didn't, but I always have that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. I don't have to destock. I don't have to go buy expensive hay. I can take it for forage. Yes. I could make baleage out of it, or, you know, silage or something. So having that option is really important. In addition, you know, we think about being as farmers to try, we don't often think about the saving money side. Mm-hmm. We think about like maximum yield and how to get the most out of every acre. But the cost savings on Kernza is incredible. Hmm. The lack of inputs that are required to grow a grain and a forage crop in the same year, that's a huge cost savings. It required very little inputs in terms of fertilizer and externally. And we don't have to irrigate or anything like that. So if we think about it in being kind of being a low-cost producer, it stands out. It's a winner because of the lack of inputs. So we think about the amount of inputs that we put into corn and soybeans, and it prices at between $3.75 and $4. It's really difficult. At this point, I think Kernza can be a highly competitive crop, not only because of all of its ecological benefits, but financially, especially if you have livestock, it works.
Well, that's a really good point. And the livestock is almost like an insurance policy for you. I mean, there's always that big risk of transitioning a farm from row crops into anything different. But it sounds like the livestock have really helped serve as a really good connection point between experimenting with a new crop, a small grain or whatever, and kind of the perennial, you know, the going down the perennial path that you're interested in too, that's just a really good transition point for you.
Well, if you think about historically, farms used to be diverse. Mm-hmm. When corn was $1, $2 a bushel, we had a lot more diversity on the landscape here in Iowa, I'm sure in the upper Midwest in general. When corn started to become $5, $6, $7, $8 a bushel and ethanol plants were starting up, you know, that's the problem that we got into, amongst a lot of other things. But having those diverse systems absolutely de-risks us as farmers. And in addition, we have the element of surprise of climate change. What is weather going to be like that year? What are we going to get? High heat? Are we going to get drying winds? Are we going to get torrential rainfall? We just don't know. And so it's an insurance policy, like you said, to have diverse outlets and diverse enterprises on the farm. It makes total sense to me. And to understand that historically that's what happened before, that's the reason why they integrated livestock into their cropping systems. It's why they had livestock, maybe more livestock than grains even, and maybe more perennials than they did grain crops. It makes total sense. And we're really moving into that, toward that direction right now, whether we want it or not, due to climate change.
That's a really good point. I mean, the old saw used to be you're walking that crop off the farm through the livestock. And this is a good example of why that made sense. Mm-hmm. And creates that tight nutrient cycle. I mean, there's so many benefits related to that.
Yeah, I can't say enough about having livestock back on the land. Mm-hmm. When we first moved here, you know, we were taught to wean lambs and cows early, or calves early, put them in a feedlot, you feed them grain, you get them to market as fast as you can. But there's so much synergy between plants and soil and animals, and it's just this natural thing that it's beautiful to witness. And I can't imagine farming in any different way. than being more livestock-centric.
Mm-hmm. I can't get over the, I guess, irony, but it's a positive irony, of we were out at the grazing paddock where the cattle were with the Kernza, and in a sea of corn and beans, and one of the reasons we're in a sea of row crops here is I saw in the distance the ethanol plant. I mean, there's something just really, I guess, symbolic of that, or ironic of that, that there's this ethanol plant that has been a big player in why so much we've seen livestock leave the land and row crops. But then here you are kind of bringing that back, and we're seeing trucks booming by, you know, hauling corn to the ethanol plant. I don't know if that's something you ever think about, but there is just that little bit of irony here where you've got this little, this patch of perennial power, as you say.
It's kind of a theme, I think, in our social media feed, is having all the perennials and the grazing and having that ethanol plant in the background. It is a great, ironic, and very different system, I guess. It highlights that. Yeah, you know, I'm not like, hey, every farmer turn every field of corn into Kernza or into grazing or pastures, but what if every farmer or landowner in Iowa had 40 or 60 acres of something different, something to offset their risk that also has great benefits to their soil? Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much. And if every farmer or landowner did that, just think about the increased water quality that we would have in our state and what we're sending downriver. It's a game changer.
The next episode of Ear to the Ground will feature a conversation with members of the Forever Green team about their efforts to help build viable markets for crops like Kernza. For more on diversifying agriculture with small grains, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 366 at landstewardshipproject.org. On that page, you'll find links to other podcasts we've done on Kernza and small grains in general. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. It helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.